Carlin, you know, is Commissioner Daly here.
I don't have her absent, so.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and start, because I have to read the script anyway. Good afternoon. This is the February 9th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Ritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Udaly. Wheeler.
Here. So here's my usual statement provided. Before we begin, I want to say a few words regarding council proceedings and maintaining decorum. The purpose of these meetings is for people to be heard, for the council to do its business. Everybody needs to feel comfortable and included. There'll be an opportunity during each of our heard items today for public testimony. State your name for the record. We don't need your address. If you're a lobbyist, say so. If you're representing an organization, say so. Don't disrupt the meetings. If you do disrupt the meetings, you're robbing other people of their opportunity to be heard, and you could also be excluded from the council session. Could I ask you, Carla, to please read the first two items? We're going to consider them together.
Item 122, consider the proposal of the Institute of International Christian Communications and Rudy Manziel of Bridgeway Realty Resources, LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation for a portion of the site from high-density single-dwelling residential to low-density multi-dwelling residential, and to change the zoning map designation from R5 to R2 for property at 6012 Southeast Yamhill Street, LU15-280008, CPZC. And item 123, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and amend the zoning map for property at 6012 Southeast Yamhill Street at the request of Rudy Manziel, LU15-280008, CPZC.
Very good. We're going to start off with the city attorney giving us a couple of comments about today's hearing.
Hi, good afternoon. This is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to council in support of your arguments. For council consideration of hearings officer recommendation on a comprehensive plan map, testimony will be heard as follows. We'll begin with the staff report from BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the city council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and have 15 minutes to address council. After the applicant, the council will hear from the individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Each person, again, will have 3 minutes to speak. If there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, applicant will have 5 additional minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. Council may then choose to close the hearing and deliberate. I would like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing City Council today. Any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to Council Clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to Council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the Council Clerk to make sure they become part of the record. After testimony, arguments and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe apply to the decision. The BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the council. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Additionally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to the proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing any actions for damages in circuit court.
Very good. Thank you. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest at this time? There are no council members declaring a conflict at this time. Do any members of the council have ex parte contacts to declare information gathered outside of this hearing that they'd like to disclose? There are none. Have any members of the council made any visits to the site that are involved in this matter? None have. Do the council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin this hearing? Seeing none, we will then start with the staff report.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Matt Wickstrom. I'm from the Bureau of Development Services.
Thanks, Matt.
1900 Southwest 4th Avenue. And today we're having a land use review hearing for a conditional use, a comprehensive plan map amendment and a zoning map amendment for a property at 6012 Southeast Yamhill. The proposal is to change the zoning map designation for the approximately 85% of the site from R5, which is residential 5,000, that's a single dwelling zone, to R2, that's residential 2,000, and it's a multi-dwelling zone. And then the remainder of the proposal is to change both the comprehensive plan map designation and the zoning map designation for the about 15% of the site from R5 residential 5,000 to R2 residential 2,000. And that's from a high-density single dwelling zone comp plan designation to a low-density multi-dwelling comprehensive plan map designation. This is a map of the current zoning of the site. You'll see that that it's entirely zoned R5 right now. The next slide, I zoom in on this a little more so we can talk about the map distinctions between properties that have similar comprehensive plan map and zoning map designations as opposed to those that are different. The building was previously used as a dormitory for the International Christian Communications, and prior to that, it was nurses' dorms for the medical center across the street. So here's a zoom in on the zoning of the site, and you'll see this here, the R5 with the R2 in parentheses demonstrates that the current zoning of the site is different from the anticipated future zoning of the site, or different from the comprehensive plan map designation. And so that's reflected by having one zone, this is the current zone, R5, with another zone in parentheses, which is the comprehensive plan map designation, and that's R2. And this is where we see about 85% of the site with this designation. This small area of the site down here, which is about the 15%, is zoned R5, and when there isn't a different zoning designation in parentheses after the current zoning, it demonstrates that the current zoning and the anticipated future zoning are the same. So this area of the site is zoned R5. Also, this is the area of the site where the comprehensive plan map amendment review and the zoning map amendment review applies, whereas the remainder of the site, the larger portion, only requires the zoning map amendment. And so this is what the proposed zoning map would look like with the entire site zoned R2 residential 2000. You'll see there's a dot on the site that demonstrates that this is a historic landmark, and it became a historic landmark through a hearing in front of the Historic Landmarks Commission in 2016. And the building is planned to be converted to 76 dwelling units. Those are primarily studios. And because of the historic designation, there's no maximum density applied to the site. It's part of the historic preservation incentives to allow additional density for historic landmarks. And the applicant plans to retain the existing 15 on-site parking spaces. Those are surface parking spaces. And then that's another historic preservation incentive, which is that historic landmarks are required to retain the parking that they have, but not add additional parking if there's additional density or within the project. This is an aerial view of the site, and we'll use this as the site tour. I have some additional on-the-ground slides at the end if you'd want to see those. But you'll see these are the dorms right here. Here's the small portion of the parking lot that has just the residential 5,000 designation. This is the medical center across the street. We've got a church to the west, single-dwelling residential development to the south, and then to the northwest and the northeast of the site is R2, which is multi-dwelling designation. There's some low-density, there's some houses and some low-density apartments. And then to the north here at the intersection of Yamhill and or Belmont and 60th, there's a small commercial node with some retail and insurance office in that, that kind of development. This is a picture of the building. It ranges from 2 to 4 stories, with 4 stories fronting on Southeast 60th. And then as far as the approval criteria goes, the comprehensive plan map amendment approval criteria is found in 33810050. And this approval criteria has to do with requiring the proposal to be consistent and on balance with the goals and policies of the comprehensive plan. And this is today's comprehensive plan, not the updated comprehensive plan that's expected to go into effect in 2018. And then the zoning map approval criteria is found in 33855050. And that criteria requires that the proposal show adequacy of city services to support the proposed zoning. As far as the findings go, the comprehensive plan map amendment approval criteria were found to be on balance equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan. It satisfies Metro's requirements. The proposal provides more opportunities for housing and housing types. The proposal is consistent with transportation policies and objectives. And the overall project will be consistent with surrounding development. As far as the zoning map amendment goes, the proposal meets the approval criteria for base zone changes. The proposed zoning is consistent with the comprehensive plan map designation. And the City Bureau's found that the site has adequate public services for the zone, and BES added a condition of approval regarding stormwater management. And both PBOT and BES are here today in case there's any questions about that condition or any questions about transportation-related findings. At the hearing with the hearings officer, there are testimony from 4 individuals. The testimony focused on pedestrian safety, increased traffic, and parking. In reference to parking, I believe the applicant has additional parking-related information that they would like to submit into the record. As far as pedestrian safety and goes, PBOT's response at the hearing was that, yes, there potentially could be pedestrian safety issues. However, they're not related to this proposal, and the appropriate channel would be to call the 823 SAFE number and see if there can be some investigation of that. And in conclusion, the hearings officer recommended approval of the comprehensive plan map amendment to change the designation from high-density single dwelling, that's R5 or residential 5,000, to low-density multi-dwelling, that's R2 or residential 2,000, for the landlocked segment of the site. The hearings officer also recommended approval of the zoning map amendment to change the zoning from R5 to R2, and that's consistent with the 2035 comp plan update. Oh, you know, I should also have pointed out that the comprehensive plan update that's expected to go into effect in 2018 proposed this same change of the entire site to become R2 zoning. So this would almost just be a sort of stopgap measure so the applicant could move forward with the project prior to that change going into effect. And that concludes my presentation. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Good.
Okay,
thank you. That was thorough.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the applicant. And you have 15 minutes, sirs.
Good
Could I ask a question of legal counsel? Does the time allotted, I assume we have to be fairly specific about the time allotted, does that include questions and answers or no?
You have discretion to adjust the time so that you can ask questions and answers. So I think we just set it out so the public knows, but you have discretion to.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Sorry to interrupt, and if you could just state your name for the record, you don't have to state your address.
My name is Rudy Munzel. That's spelled, last name is spelled M-U-N-Z-E-L. There was a spelling error on the application, but that's the proper spelling of my name. I'm an investor and representative of Reham 6 LLC et al. We're a small Portland investment group requesting rezoning of 6012 Southeast Yamhill from R5 to R2 that proposes creating desperately needed workforce housing in Portland. Thank you to the mayor and the city council for considering our request today. Thank you to BDS and BPS city staff for assisting us and our consultants to work through the complicated task of meeting the many facets and rules and regulations and complying with them. Thank you to our consultants from the Booking Group, Lancaster Engineering, Heritage Consulting, and Dave Rodeback Architects. The report you've seen will be better explained by your staff and the consultants beside me than I can possibly do. What I would like to contribute to this is explaining some of the more intangible merits of this project that may not be obvious to you or be in the report. However, I think there are aspects that you may want to consider when deciding on a thumbs up or thumbs down vote towards our rezoning request. In addition, I'm happy to attempt any answers to any of your questions afterwards. Our ownership is a private, small group of mostly Portlanders that have invested their personal savings, along with myself, in projects that my business partner, Gary Oka, through the company of Bridgeway Realty Resources, LLC, have found and created into business plans that are not only profitable, but consider from their very inception important concepts that parallel the City of Portland's goals and the unique personality that Portland has. We use no public funding in our projects. I think we are an example how private enterprise can provide much-needed resources in a respectful and considerate fashion and fit into the Portland fabric while putting no financial burden on the taxpayers of Portland. We are not a fund. We are not a large corporation from outside of Portland that comes through and then disappears after imposing projects on Portland that fit the corporation's ideals but unduly consider the city's needs. It is with some pride that us and our investors can look at our past projects that add to the Portland livability. Our business plan is to provide workforce housing, respect the environment, and preserve buildings that are often on the cusp of demolition and have apparently come to the end of their useful economic life. With careful thought, we adaptively reuse the building that can add to the betterment of Portland. And some important elements of this in our work are historic preservation that keeps the fabric and livability of our neighborhoods intact and is almost always appreciated by the residents. This respects not only the feel of the neighborhood, but guarantees that it will be for so many future years, as the new laws that were recently enacted make it almost impossible to tear these buildings down at a later date. This project is in the process of going through historic registry. We create workforce housing that considers income brackets. We have done this long before some of the new regulations like inclusionary housing and other recent rules moving the cost of annual rent increases up by more than 10%, well before they were enacted. We believe in creating rental units that we have a duty to understand the wide spectrum of the users and formulate our business plan around that, and not a narrow top market user that has an earning capacity that is much higher than most Portlanders. Some environmental considerations are also taken into account. Environmental considerations are also an important aspect of our plan. Adaptive reuse means preventing our landfills from being unnecessarily filled. Although our projects don't receive official LEED certificates that most other new high-rise towers receive, we think that we are much more friendly to the environment than these projects. Most modern environmental analysis recognizes that newer buildings usually mean clearing old sites of old buildings. These discarded buildings unnecessarily fill and pollute our landfills. In addition, many of the new buildings using concrete add a tremendous amount of CO2 to our environment when cooking the lime to create the basic ingredients for concrete. On the other hand, doing the extra work to figure out an adaptive reuse avoids these damaging actions. Some recent examples of our work are the Everett Microloss, which were built in 1914 originally, and was previously called the Everett Hotel in the corner of Northwest Broadway and Everett on the edge of Old Town Chinatown. The second and third floors were at the time, 2010, vacated for over 6 years. The roof was falling in, and it was in fact raining in the building. The building was ready to collapse. We bought it and converted it to microloft apartments. It's now called Everett Microlofts, and it has 18 workforce housing units on the top two floors and retail on the bottom floor from locally owned businesses. It was also placed by us on the historic registry to preserve it. Another recent project of ours is Mississippi Court Apartments that previously was a drug and rehab center for single mothers run by LifeWorks. The operators were, at the time of our purchase, in the process of building a new facility a few blocks away, and so the building appeared to be not economically viable anymore. We converted it to 42 workforce apartment units and went through an occupancy change.
Sir, can I just jump in for a second?
This yes.
Won't cut against your time. Just so that we can all follow this as carefully as possible, are you challenging a condition of approval?
No.
You're not?
No.
Okay, so, all right. I just want to make sure I'm
I just wanted to give a little bit larger spectrum than the report you've seen. That's my purpose.
It has to come to the council, as I understand it, because it's a comp plan review. It's a change to the comp plan, and that's why it has to be heard.
I have a staff memo. So there's no condition of approval which you object to?
No.
So you're just asking us to approve the hearing officer's ruling?
Correct. I just wanted to give you a little better spectrum.
No, it's okay.
That's my purpose.
As long as, I just want to make sure that that's what you're seeking. And rest
This is a recommendation from the hearings officer, so it has to come to council, and you make the evidentiary hearing and make the final decision.
So that actually concludes my comments.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's okay. It actually was very timely, so that's fine.
I just wanted to make sure in the remaining time there was no... I had been led to believe there might be a condition of approval question here.
No.
Absent that, very good.
Thank you.
So how do you define workforce housing?
Well, I think we don't really have a formal... I'm careful not to use terms like affordable housing and stuff because it has connotations that mean very specific things to people. So I want to use a term that simply means that we look at the large spectrum of housing needs in Portland, not the top tier, but kind of the middle income. Okay, we try to fit in that. Giving a firm example, we're planning on putting 76 units in this apartment, and they're going to be right around 1,000, some units below that, some above that. Okay, so that's affordable for most people. Generally, you think of housing needs to be no more than one-third of your income. So when you start looking at incomes and saying, what can you spend, that's really the largest part of this market segment. So that's what we focus on. That's what we also focused on and provided in those other two projects, Everett Microloss and Mississippi Court Apartments that we already finished a couple years ago.
The building currently occupied?
Which one?
The building that we've seen.
It has some applicants. We bought it from Worldview. That's also ICCS or whatever it is.
IICC.
Yes, sorry. So they do occupy a little of the building right now. They're in the process of moving out, so they are finding other... their business plan changed, really, because of actually what happened in 9/11. It's a long story, but...
It's
not viable anymore.
It's so they're vacant. Empty.
It's largely empty, but not empty.
Did you gentlemen have anything else to add? Great, thank you.
My name is Chris Hagerman, H-A-G-E-R-M-A-N. We're with the Booking Group. We're the land use planners for this. I only have a couple of quick comments, and then I'm going to turn it over to our transportation engineer. I wanted to thank staff. All the Bureau staff have been very helpful in helping us navigate all the options and procedures for getting to this point. I wanted to mention that currently, up until they purchased the building, it's operated with a conditional use for 90 residents and office space for 10 office workers as well as teaching. So the goal is that this project, this conversion of use to apartments, won't be a significantly increase, if at all, in the intensity of the use of the building. So from the neighborhood perspective, there shouldn't be a change in how they interact with the neighborhood. There shouldn't be a change in how it feels. The students, because they're on the school cycle, I think they started to move out probably last year at the end of the school season, I would expect. So, and at this point, I'd like to turn over to Mike Ard of Lancaster Engineering to talk about parking.
Thank you, Chris. Mike Ard, that's A-R-D with Lancaster Engineering. I'm the transportation engineer that has been involved from the beginning of this project with reviewing what the comprehensive plan amendment and zone change would mean in terms of changes to the traffic in the area and what the city needs to do, if anything, to address the impacts associated with it. This is a little bit of a unique application in that usually when we're looking at a zone change, we're required under Oregon's transportation planning rule to look at how the picture changes under what's called the reasonable worst-case development scenario. So we look at the existing zoning and we see what you're allowed to do under that zoning, and then we say, okay, well, what about the proposed zoning? What are you allowed to do under that? And if somebody built out the maximum under what the current zoning is and then they changed it to the maximum under the new zoning, does that create new impacts? In this particular case, that isn't really the right question. Even though it's still a requirement legally, and we did fulfill that requirement, that analysis resulted in a change of two trips between the two types of zoning, a negligible impact. But of course, we recognize that there's an existing use on the site and there's a planned use of the site that don't really fit within the cubbyholes of what's allowed in the zoning because this is a historic property. And so we also went and analyzed what the actual use is today and made a comparison between that and what the actual proposed use is in the future. And that's a more significant, although still not huge impact, an increase of 11 trips during the evening peak hour and 14 during the morning peak hour. So it's a relatively small traffic impact in that context. We did prepare an initial traffic impact study that I don't think has been the subject of much debate or concern in its findings, but there were some specific concerns that were raised during the context of our prior hearing in front of the hearings examiner by the neighborhood, and we wanted to be proactive in addressing those concerns, even though some of them may not be directly relevant to this application and the decision that's made today. We did want to provide answers where we could. And one of those is in the form of a parking analysis memorandum that I prepared. The parking analysis memorandum was in response to concerns about whether there's adequate parking in the vicinity to support 76 micro or mini apartment units in this area. And it's kind of a unique land use in that usually I would go to the ITE trip generation manual and I would look up for an apartment how many vehicles are expected to park during the late night hours when everybody is home, and what's that demand look like on the system? Because these are 300 square foot units, we would expect fewer occupants in them. We would also expect people who are more inclined to active transportation, walking, biking, and using transit. And so in order to get a sense of what the parking demand looks like for that type of use, I went out to a similar location, and it is the Tabor Commons development located, I'm sorry, reading the wrong spot, that's this one. I should have it listed here, the Alder Royal Apartments, which are located at 16124 Southeast Alder Street. There was a prior project that Mr. Munzel did that was also a small form factor apartment that's actually in the downtown area that might provide better insight, except that it doesn't have dedicated parking, so it's impossible to go out there and say that car is associated with the development and that one is not. So in the case of the Alder Royal site, they have two parking facilities, one on each side of two buildings, and they have 400 square foot apartments. So it's a little bit larger in form factor than what's being proposed here. But it did give us a good sense and a reasonable conservative upper bound of what the parking demand would be. So based on that and based on our inventory of parking as it exists currently on the street in the site vicinity, we found that it is currently 41% full during the late evening peak hours, and that in the future it would be projected to be 68% full, considering that existing demand plus approved development that's already occurring in the area plus this site. So there is sufficient parking to address that need. The last thing that we heard was related to a pedestrian crossing concern, and that's something that I wanted to take very seriously. As the question was raised, it was also raised with a solution in mind, that we take the intersection of 60th and Yamhill and we provide a striped crosswalk at that location. And I am definitely in favor of making safety enhancements to the area, and a crosswalk striping is actually a very cheap treatment. There's no reason to oppose that on the basis of cost. But I am concerned about what that could mean for safety. The reason is that a crosswalk, when it's marked, makes people feel more comfortable walking across the roadway. And it makes them feel more comfortable at all times, even when there's traffic coming. And because of that, the statistics show that there's about a 20% higher crash incidence that occurs at marked crosswalks versus unmarked crosswalks. So what I wanted to do to try to address that concern is look at some standards that have been established by the National Cooperative Highway Research Program that evaluate when you can do something a little bit more than just a striping of a crosswalk. It's enhanced flashers and signals and something that really causes traffic to come to a stop and provides more proactive treatment for pedestrians. What I found based on a quick analysis there was that based on the existing volumes, that would not be warranted. Based on the projected volumes, it would still not be warranted. But there's a little bit of an asterisk that I have to put on that, which is that our count data was collected during February, which is not the highest volume pedestrian part of the year. So ultimately, I think that the best approach that we can take here is, rather than saying the standards are not met to do a more robust treatment, we instead ought to say we can defer this decision to make it associated with the land use process, and at that time we may have the opportunity to evaluate the crossing needs. The city has also indicated that they would like to see this initiated as a city-sponsored process rather than directly with this. So again, it's not really related directly to the zone change and comprehensive plan amendment that's the question posed to you today, but we wanted you to know that it is on our radar and something that we're concerned about.
Great. Any further questions for this panel?
What's the speed limit on Yamhill? Do you know offhand?
I think I should have that in my notes.
Excuse me.
It's not vital if you don't have it. I'm just interested in the crosswalk question. And
according to my notes, it is an unstriped paved road allowing for two-way traffic and has a residential district statutory speed of 25 miles per hour.
Great. Okay.
Great. Thank you. So the way these hearings work, it's fairly prescribed in terms of public testimony. First up for 3 minutes each are any supporters of the applicants. Are there any people here?
I had one thing because I'm not sure whether you were asking the question you meant to ask there, because you asked about the speed limit on Yamhill, and 60th is the one that they wanted the crossing going across, so that is a 30-mile-per-hour speed limit there.
Thank you for the clarification. Is there anybody here who would like to testify in favor of the proposal?
No one else signed up besides Mr. Ard.
All right, very good. Is there anybody here who would like to testify in opposition to the proposal?
Mayor, I just have a staff question, if we
sure,
could,
before we
move to a recommendation.
Yes.
Thank you.
And if I may, Commissioner, we don't have any public testimony, so we are at the council discussion part, so this is the appropriate time to ask any further questions.
So thank you for your excellent and succinct presentation. I just have a question, because you sort of foreshadowed something which I think we're going to see more of, and I just want to make sure I understand procedurally how that happens. Because you said that in the comprehensive plan that we adopted last year, we actually changed the zoning on this site.
Correct.
Now, that probably was not, we had not probably adopted that change prior to the filing of this application. But the question is, what happens to all those property owners that hope to have our comprehensive plan adopted by LUBA and therefore made the law, you know, in a year or two, mm-hmm. who are in this interval? Is this the process to act in the interim, or is there some other process they could also pursue?
This would be the process to act in the interim if you want essentially to speed up your proposal. We've worked with the city attorney to craft language to warn anyone who's applying in this window for a comprehensive plan map zoning map designation that if it doesn't match what was adopted by council, and which is going to go into effect in 2018, that you could potentially have a zone change for a short period of time and then have it change again.
I see. That's right, because actually there's no guarantee. We have no crystal ball on actually what's going to happen at the end of the process. I mean, LUBA could reject parts of our comprehensive plan, presumably. But it just occurred to me as I was listening to you that we may well get a lot of these kinds of applications during this interval.
That's true, and I asked the applicant about that, just wondering why would you go forward with an expensive land use review like this when you know that the zoning's eventually going to change. And the response I got makes total sense. It was basically holding on to a property like this is expensive, and so the need to move forward outweighs the cost of this review that's really only necessary for a short period of time.
Thank you very much.
Other questions? All right. At this point, then, the evidentiary record in this hearing is now closed. This means that the council will accept no more oral or written testimony on the land use decision. I'm happy at this time to entertain a motion and a second to either accept or not accept the hearing officer's recommendation to the council.
Move acceptance of the report, the hearing officer's recommendation.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Saltzman, a second from Commissioner Fritz. Is there any further discussion on this item?
Mayor, my guess is that this will not take the city attorney that long to prepare findings. We should probably just inquire.
No, and yes, so you could make a tentative vote today and then come back for a second reading. I think.
How long do you think it would take to draft findings?
We have them. So you could also have them change it to an emergency ordinance and vote on it today and not come back for a second reading.
Does the applicant have a strong preference?
The sooner the better.
Time is money, right?
So, Mayor, I move that we add an emergency clause to the findings.
One question from legal counsel. That's a separate vote, correct?
Separate motion and vote, yes.
Okay, please. So let's start with that. So we have a motion and a second to change this to an emergency ordinance. Any further discussion?
And
Carla, call
the
roll. Oh, I'm sorry.
The reason being that it's in the public interest to do this as expeditiously as possible.
Agreed. Carla, please call the roll.
Sorry, who seconded?
I did. Thank you.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. And to the main motion, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, Carla, please call the roll. And this is a tentative vote. Oh, no, this is a final vote. This is it. Good.
Fritz. Well, thank you. As usual, the staff presentation was excellent, and it's gone through the proper process. Thanks to the applicants who do seem to be considering the neighborhood's concerns and willing to try to do what they can. And also thank you for preserving this building and putting it to adaptive new use. Aye.
Fish.
We get a lot of land use appeals before this body. I can't think of one that was as succinct and as clear. And I think I thank both staff for the excellent job that you do in presenting to us. And I thank the applicant for your presentation. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I really appreciated learning about the objectives of Ridgeway Realty Resources. I really appreciate the commitment to historic preservation and to building workforce housing. So I very much appreciate that. And to your transportation consultant, as the new commissioner in charge of the Transportation Bureau, I appreciated the mini lesson there about crosswalks and what speeds and things like that, all these factors that go into a simple decision, or what seems like a simple decision about a crosswalk or not. So thank you for that. Aye.
Mayor, point of order, can we just have a friendly amendment to spell the applicant's name correctly in the land use filing?
So accepted it as a friendly amendment. It's a Scribner's error. We'll fix that.
Udaly?
Thank you, everyone, for your presentations. And thank you, Mr. Manziel. I appreciate the values you bring to your projects, and I wish more developers would follow suit. Aye.
Wheeler?
Thank you, everybody, for coming well prepared. I thought that was an excellent presentation. Aye. The hearings officer recommendation is adopted on an emergency basis. The next item up is a time certain at 2:45, so let's take a 3-minute break and we'll reconvene.
2:45? Okay.
That's right.